that in-house. But for right now, that's kind of the goal. Third-party management, try to align with your goals with them and just understand they're not going to do as good of a job as you would do. But if you can buy more properties, then that's kind of why we go with third-party. And then I have the business running for direct-to-seller all the time. And then, we're working with broker relations as well, just trying to keep the off-market pipeline going at all times.
Welcome to Real Estate Hustlers Podcast. I am your host, Josh Appleman, founder and CEO of Appleman Capital. Today, we are joined with Justin. Justin is a former engineer turned multifamily investor, has acquired 59 units, creating over $1 million in equity, excels in finding off-market properties, and guides others in real estate investing. Justin, we appreciate you having you on the show today. If you could, let the listeners know a little bit more about yourself and then possibly your last name as well. I didn't want to pronounce it wrong.
I appreciate it, Josh. First of all, let me just pause and say thanks for having me on. I appreciate the platform you've built here. And, the audience certainly benefits. And the last name, which you were alluding to, is Warzyniak. But you can tell that's a bit of a mouthful, right? So I kind of go by the cash flow cowboy on social media because it makes things a little bit easier to remember versus that super long last name.
Very good. So tell us how you got started, your journey, your first property, and then how you got to where you're at.
Yeah, so I got a bit of a unique story, and it actually starts at the age of 18. I was actually arrested for the second time. And so I like to share about this because I like the audience. I like people to know that nobody's path is perfect. Nobody's perfect. But as long as you keep making strides in the right direction, it works out. And so that was actually my lesson of you're the sum of your five closest people, right, Josh? You've probably heard this a million times.
Oh, yeah.
Some people are like, your network is your net worth. Like, that was the wake-up call for me. Because what I realized, if I took like an inventory of who I was hanging out with, well, I was just kind of doing what they were doing. And as a result, I was kind of being a little bit of a degenerate myself. So that was kind of the wake up moment, the aha moment. And that's when you mentioned in my bio about engineering. Well, those were my two strikes, right? So I wasn't going to do strike three. My dad was an engineer, my grandfather, his dad was an engineer. And so I did what all of us are taught, you know, coming from middle-class America, is like, go get a nice job or a safe, secure major, and then kind of parlay that into a nice, safe job. And then, you know, if you work your tail off for 45, 50 years, then maybe you have enough to retire at the end of your life. And so that's what I did. Got an engineering degree, did really well, actually. Sorry. You're all good. Did really well on the engineering side, and parlayed that kind of into a great job in pharmaceuticals right out of college. And I thought, hey, I'm going to change the world as an engineer. But it was people like yourself, Josh, right, with podcasts. It was other people that I worked with who were doing real estate. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that's when I kind of realized I was kind of on the wrong side of the cash flow quadrant, right? I was just going to be an employee for the rest of my life. That's what I thought we're supposed to do, right? And so at the age of 25, I did something which most people would consider pretty crazy. And I left engineering, put it behind me, went into real estate full time. And that's when I started doing kind of direct to seller off market properties. And, now I'm 28 now, and we have a nice portfolio, bunch of equity, bunch of properties, multifamily that we've purchased off market. And so just trying to spread the word of, how amazing this real estate is and how cool the journey can be.
So when you quit your job and went into real estate full time, did you have a pipeline built up? Did you have a nest egg so that the jump wasn't so dramatic? What did that look like?
Josh, that'd be a great idea, right? Yeah. Have a pipeline built up. No, it was crazy. Like I said, it was a little crazy. So what I did was, there was kind of twofold. One was, by no means did I have passive income to replace the active income, which is a lot of, usually that's the ideal time to make the jump, right? All I had at that time was a house hack. So I was at least living for free and, keeping expenses down. You know, I was a new graduate, so I didn't have a bunch of bills, didn't have like a family and kids or anything like that. But then over time of kind of the first 2 years of engineering, I kind of saved up a bunch of money. So that was kind of like I had a nest egg, and then I had a house hack. So when I made this switch, instead of, you know, just, you know, I needed income, right? So instead of just spending all my money, I went and actually got a broker's license and did like, I don't know, like 20 or 30 transactions just with other investors in town. Hey, let me help you find properties. Let me help broker the sales. And that was a way of getting commission while also kind of learning how this whole business works. And that was really impactful for me for the first like year did that. And then that's when I switched and was like, all right, now it's time to start being the investor, right? It's enough building wealth for them. It's time for me to start building that wealth.
Yeah, that's actually, I'm pushing my nephew into joining a third party brokerage in order to learn the business, because there's tools and processes and a knowledge that you gain from having that first person experience right there in the thick of it. And usually they're stuck with the worst parts of the job, which are the most learning lessons, like building the OMs and gathering the data and building the performas. And I mean, that's a huge leg up and advantage if you can get started in a brokerage to learn the industry. With the onset of knowing that you want to get in the investor side, but there's definitely a lot to learn there. So tell us about your first deal and how that came over to the second deal and the third deal. I know you're and then how you financed your deals. How you started creating arbitrage?
Yeah. So the first deal was summer 2021. Is a 10 unit apartment building in the Midwest. So it was in Indiana, and you're going to love this. I'll kind of go a little in the nitty gritty on this one, just because it's so funny looking back. This thing, we, in 1995 build apartment, 10 units. And we had sent a cold text message to the owner, right? So this is part of that direct to seller, cold outreach. And it was simple. It was really like, hey, Ed, are you interested in selling this property? We had the property address. If so, let us know. And he just straight to the point. He goes, yep, $350,000. $35,000 a unit. <That's incredible. laughs> And I look back at this deal and I remember being like, I don't know. Is this a good deal? Is this not a good deal? Like, I had no idea. It was so new, not realizing that it was a freaking home run, like right in front of my face at that price point. So we were able to get it at a massive discount. Did end up using a big chunk of that nest egg on that deal. So by that deal, and then after the second deal, your boy was—I was broke, right? The nest egg was gone, and that I'll touch on how we've switched with the partnership structure. But that first 10 units, you know, I was brand new, didn't really know what I was doing. It's been great, but looking back, the key things that went into that are: one, that whole time I was listening to podcasts, I was reading books on Bigger Pockets and stuff. So accumulating education, right? Because education kind of fights that analysis paralysis, right? The other thing that I had done is I started going to local meetups, which is so, so important, because I started getting surrounded by other people doing real estate and having success. And I got to see how they were doing it. I got to hear how they were talking about stuff, right? Got to utilize them for recommendations for the different lenders and management companies and stuff like that. So that was key. And then I had also joined a mastermind, like a national mastermind platform as well, where now I had mentorship and coaching and some education, and I had a network of other real estate professionals across the country. And so it was actually through that mastermind that I found the partners, but then our mentor from that was the one that kind of was like, hey guys, calm down. This is a great deal. Like, buy it. And so it was nice to have that kind of reassurance from somebody who had, you know, hundreds of units at the time, had done deals like that, to just be like, this is going to be a good one.
That's right? A huge confidence booster when you've got someone seasoned saying, go ahead and get it. This is an incredible deal. That's
exactly. Put that in perspective. So that was super impactful.
Sam and Sam Zell's days, it was around $3,500 per unit of what they were spending. So, I mean, that's to put that in perspective. And then now to get class A, $150,000 plus, but it's, that's the times for us. But keep going. We like it. It's good stuff.
Yeah. So that was awesome. Looking back 10 units, some of the audience might be like, oh, that's big. If you're doing single family, or maybe you're doing 100 plus units and that's small, it doesn't matter. But for me, isolated, that was the first investment property of anybody in my family ever, right? So that was like legacy building property. So that was crazy. And then I got the bug after that. I was like, okay, I like this. Like, this is great. I want to be, you know, the investor. I want to buy a bunch of these, generate a ton of wealth over time through real estate. And so then the next year, so that was 21, 22. In the beginning, we had four properties under contract at one time. Ended up wholesaling one of them, purchasing three of them. And then 2023, we did another big wholesale deal. And then we just closed our largest asset to date, which was 27 unit. And then right now I have another two properties under contract. So if we close these two early next year, we're looking at, you know, 88 units essentially in 2.5 years, nice. Which is pretty great, all things considered, thinking that, you know, mid pandemic, I was an engineer, and now look at me, like it's almost like you know, you fast forward, you don't believe what you can accomplish in such a short period of time. And that's all I kind of attribute all that to off market deals. So we can get them at big discounts. And then really like mentorship and having the right people around you, and make sure you're listening to the right people like yourself, Josh, and the audience needs to be listening to you because you're putting out information that, you know, from someone who's done it versus your family and friends who haven't done anything. They're going to try to push you away from this real estate thing. Maybe say it's a little risky, but education and listening to the right people, you can accomplish anything.
Well, I think that but consistency is everything, but people, I don't know if you've heard this term, 3 feet from gold or 3 feet from the goal, but people give up too soon. They're right there and they don't even realize it. And real estate is it's a slow game. You have to have patience. It's delayed gratification, but once you pick up steam and you start getting things going, that's when it can become fun. Because if you have one, two, or three just single family houses, if that's what that's what your experience is as a real estate investing game, then you're going to be burned out. There's no gain cash flow wise to that. It'll show up on your balance sheet as a gain, but it can also burn you out as far as a landlord and dealing with what you need to deal with just tenants and renovations and issues. But real estate, as you can scale and get more units like you're doing, it can become gratifying. And it's another thing is it's extremely capital intensive. So there's a balance of how much cash you can put out and still qualify to keep buying, because ultimately the lender is going to look at your cash in the bank. So 10% of liquidity for the loan amount plus your net worth equal to the loan amount. So you've got to maintain balances. So if you keep on shoveling out cash, you're cutting yourself short on the next acquisition as well. Go into a little bit of how you're structuring your deals and how you're maintaining that balance as well.
That was a great segue into deal structure, because you're right. I do those first two deals and I'm down to no cash, right? I'm, you know, broke, right? And then how am I still buying properties then? So it's a combination of sometimes we'll wholesale properties for some extra capital, but how we do most of our structures now is I am the value, right? At the end of the day, what value do you provide to a partnership? The value I provide is the deal, right? I am hustling to find these deals, get them under contract, get the lender, get the property management, get everything set up, do the asset management. And so you think about it, if you're maybe a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer with a great, great paycheck, paying a ton of taxes, you don't have the time to go out and pound the pavement like I am for deals. So really what you're looking for is you want to partner with a deal finder, and you're kind of more of the capital side of things. And that's how we've started structuring it, especially within our mastermind and stuff like that. It kind of facilitates that type of partnership. So, you know, I'll find it. I'll, you know, give myself a little bit of an acquisition fee, and usually I'll just roll that acquisition fee into my equity contribution, my capital contribution, and then carve off a little of the equity for asset management and kind of deal finding and stuff like that. And then bring in capital partners, and they, you know, we provide solid returns for them. Usually these deals are, you know, the biggest one we did was 27. So most of these are actually JV partnerships, and it provides them a way to get in on a deal that they would have never had the time to find. And it provides me to get deals done that I would never have been able to done without their capital. And then also you mentioned it, right? Balance sheet. That's another huge component that they're bringing to the table, because if a lender to look at my financials right now, they're going to be like, you have, you know, seven properties and no cash. Like, what do you like? What the heck is this? Like, that's, we're not going to approve a loan for you. But if you have a, you know, a doctor with $1 million salary that's signing on the loan, they're more than happy to approve the debt, right? So that's kind of the capital partners are bringing, you know, money and balance sheet, and I'm able to bring good deals to invest in.
Yeah, yeah, and the acquisition fee, I think that's an important note. That's there's cost if you're doing direct to the seller marketing. I'm assuming that you're doing text blasting, you're doing email campaigns, you're calling, probably calling list. There's a cost that keeps accumulating, and that's a cost of marketing. But in order for you to provide off-market deals at a discounted rate, that acquisition fee helps offset that hard cost, plus get you through to the next deal. So there's no huge gains to acquisition fees, and plus if you're putting that right back into the deal as your equity contribution. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're roller coasting the thing, but that could lead to kind of a burnout as well. Cause you want to be able to at a certain point in time, prove that what you're doing is worth it to your family as well. And that might be selling a property. It might be, you're up to almost 60 units, so you're going to see it, and you already see it. It's becoming more real. But someone who's not quite there yet, it might start leading to burnout. How can, with your experience, how can you give advice on not leading to burnout and start proving to yourself mm-hmm. and your family that you're going down the right direction?
Josh, I'm actually really glad that you asked that question, because I struggled with this. Like, I get a little emotional, like, thinking about this, because when I first got started, right, this real estate game is a exponential growth game. But that means when you're first started, you're at the flattest part of that curve, and there's not a ton of gain at that point. It's actually, right. it's that's when the mindset is super important. And so I mentioned, I bought that first deal 2021, right? And then in 2022, purchased another three properties, right? So I'm doing what I'm supposed to, right? I'm buying cash flowing deals, finding off market. But the reality is a lot of your capital gets tied up in those deals until you kind of get to the refinance and the snowballing. And that's when the curve takes off, the exponential curve takes off. So December 2022, right? I am trying to negotiate an off market deal. I've done four deals at that point, right? So people look and you're like, hey, he's successful, right? He's doing it correctly. Trying to do this off market deal, and it's almost out of necessity, right? The marketing costs, like the bank account's going down and going down and going down. And so I get a call from the owner, and I thought this was a for sure deal. Like, I really needed this. They call and they say, hey, you know, we really liked you. We really were interested in passing our legacy on with this property. But, you know, I talked to my son and he's just going to go ahead and take over. And so, you know, that's our son. We're going to keep it in the family. And I got that call. I was driving home. I'm in the parking lot of my apartment complex, and I'm like, I'm defeated. Like, literally in my head, I pull up my bank account and I look, and it's got $2,250.94 in my bank account. Well, this was December 1st, and I owed my marketing rep, my acquisition rep, $2,000, sent the payment. So I'm looking at my bank account, $250.94. I felt like a complete failure. Like, I couldn't go in the house. My fiance was in the house. I couldn't go acknowledge this situation, because I was like, I'm broke. I'm failing. I'm not doing this. Right. So I took a drive, tried to clear my head. It did not work at all. Came back and just walked in and kind of like, hey, head down, and told her the news. Right. Hey, like, I don't even know if I should be doing this business anymore. I'm failing. I suck. Like, all this stuff. Just, she literally walks over and goes, you prepared me for this when you left engineering. Picked my head up, looked at me in the eyes, was like, you told me this was not going to be easy, but just like we've always had, we'll figure it out. Keep going. right? And I'm like, oh my God, I like lost it. So then you fast forward a month later, we're it's still tight, 2 months later, I'm walking and I'm cashing a $60,000 check because we hit a wholesale, right? Unbelievable stuff. But I was ready to give up. And you mentioned like how important it is to have that support system behind you. It is paramount, especially at first, because without it, I would have gone back to engineering. I'd be sitting at a cubicle right now doing spreadsheets and not able to realize this long-term wealth. And I wouldn't have got to the exponential growth portion of the curve that, you know, we're all trying to get to. So I appreciate you asking the question, because it really, I think anybody listening, especially when you're early on, stick with it, make sure you're getting surrounded with people that are encouraging you, because you're going to need to lean on them.
Well, that proves the saying back, you're 3 feet from gold. A lot of people give up, quit right there when they're so close to making it. And if you just, consistency wins all. If you can be the jockey on a horse that's consistent with showing up and can be bet on, that's going to win the game. It might not be today or tomorrow, but consistency will win down the road at some point. And you proved having that support system behind the scenes, somebody who's there through the thick of it, that's huge, because we put the work in, we do what we need to do, but being able to prove that we're doing things right by our family, we feel like it's our duty and obligation. Having a support system is massive. Very cool. So tell us about some of the other learning lessons. Are you all currently managing your own properties? Are you third party? What does that look like?
I try to focus simply on deal sourcing, right? I also do the asset management, but we do hire third party property management to run the deals. Eventually, once we get to enough scale with units, we'll probably bring that in-house. But for right now, that's kind of the goal. Third party management, try to align with your goals with them and just understand they're not going to do as good of a job as you would do. But if you can buy more properties, then that's kind of why we go with third party. And then I have the business running for direct to seller all the time. And then, we're working with broker relations as well, just trying to keep the off market pipeline going at all times. And then once I do buy properties, kind of setting up the systems for, you know, just staying on top of those and asset management wise.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's definitely a balance, because ultimately where your focus goes, energy flows. And when you go into property management, you have to get stuck into the weeds at some degree, but you're forced to see things that you wouldn't see on the other side, because property management is taking care of those on your behalf. But it does cost money, and it does eat up their time as well. At some point in time, I think that every investor needs to switch over and take over management, whether that's 200 units, 1,000 units, 5,000 units, whatever it may be. But the cost to farm that duty out becomes more expensive and less worth it if you can just bring it in house and even acquire a property management company to roll in. But yeah, there's definitely savings to be gained. How are you all right now? You're filling the funnel up. You're finding off market deals. What can you give the listeners, the beginning real estate investors that are not sure how to get into it? What kind of nuggets can you give them to get into to finding and sourcing off-market deals?
Yeah. So I'll break down the business like real high level and then kind of show you how my business has evolved a little bit, and, you know, audience can implement it in their own lives. So just to kind of break down direct to seller, it's really like three components, like driving a car. It's like, you got your fuel. So what kind of leads are you going after? Your list of properties, really, like who you're targeting. It's kind of like your fuel. And then you have the vehicle itself, which is where you want to be consistent, Josh, right? You mentioned it a few times, consistency, consistency, consistency. In this aspect where you're following up with those leads, you're marketing to them in some aspect, whether that's email, text message, cold calling, direct mail. You know, we obviously have our preferences, but some sort of consistent marketing to those leads. And then you kind of have the driver of the vehicle, which is going to be you or your team. And the component to focus on there is how good are you at building relationships? Because as soon as you realize that what you're doing is reaching out to people you know, obviously you're trying to buy their property, but if you focus on building the relationship, the property sale happens so much easier, right? And we actually realized this a lot where I was the most, I'm super consistent in my marketplace. I was getting in front of them and I felt like the conversations were going well. And then we'd submit an offer and they wouldn't accept it. And we'd submit an offer and they wouldn't accept it. And I was like, what am I doing wrong? Like I'm checking all the boxes. But then if you go back and you look at my conversations with them, it was everything I talked about was just related to that property. And I didn't ask about their family. I didn't ask about their hobbies. I didn't ask about who they were as people. And then what I missed was they didn't trust me when it came time for me to submit an offer. So you're not going to sell a property to somebody you don't trust, right? And so then we switched it up. And now all we do is really focus on you know, who they are as a person and what their problems are and how we can solve them through the acquisition of their property. And it's kind of cool. You can kind of see the iteration of that in our CRM system, right? How we track our leads and manage them. Our notes now are like 90% who they are and then like 10% about the property, whereas it used to be the other way around. And we found so much more success. And it feels a little bit better too, because you're kind of out there as a solution to people who are, you know, everybody's struggling. I just mentioned about, I had financial struggles nobody would have known about. Everybody has something that's going on in their life. And if you can help solve that, then you're gonna have success.
Yeah, and that even goes into like seller finance. A lot of real estate investors that have portfolios, they don't necessarily want cash to be taxed on and then put it in the bank. If going direct, you open up the opportunity for them to even create the note for you, and then you just make payments to them every month based on the cash flow the property is already producing. Which, I mean, that could be an infinite gain if done correctly. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I love direct to owner marketing. We tried it for a long time, didn't find our success. While we partner up and build relationships with brokers, but I think if you stick with it long enough and you implement the right systems and do it right, you can certainly find success doing it for sure. Like yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And brokers are doing a form of direct to seller on their own, right? So if you have a strong relationship with them. And I obviously market myself as direct to seller, but if you think about it, it's really, how do you increase the flow to your lead pipeline? And a lot of like the two deals that we have under contract right now were off market pocket listings through brokers. And that's part of also our system tracks, not only our leads as, you know, property owners, it's also setting follow-ups with brokers and wholesalers in your markets and kind of, you know, making sure you're following up with them, you know, reiterate what your buying criteria is. Because if it hits the market, most likely, unless you're doing something super unique, it's low probability of being a good deal. But if you can get to it before it hits the market, you could start getting a little creative too, with, you know, how you're structuring the deal. And then that ultimately leads to a little bit more win-win situations.
Yeah. I think building that relationship up with the owners directly, that's, that leads to a certainty to close. The owners want to make sure that you can do what you say you can do. And that's the same with a broker. You close a deal with a broker, they know you can close, they know what your criteria is, and that solidifies future deal flow. But it's important. The relationship piece is massive, and then actually transacting on that relationship is even bigger, and that can compound. Very cool. Is there anything that you want to tell the audience that I haven't asked? Get out there and give some nuggets away. Anything at all?
No, everything. So we do, I mentioned direct seller a ton. We do help people get to where I'm at, right? I'm consistently finding off-market deals now. And, you know, I mentioned the curve is flat at first. You need that support system. You need that help. So we've actually, starting this year, part of our kind of give back to the next generation mindset was kind of package everything that we do, system, resources, coaching, whatever it may be, and help other people. So if anybody is interested audience-wise, check it out, nostressdts.com. Schedule a call with me. I will literally hop on a 15-minute call with you and make sure your marketing efforts are headed in the right direction. It's all about adding value, and that's where, you know, we feel we can add a ton of value to people and help them find deals in a market cycle where deals are quite a bit of a luxury right now with, volume on market volume being so low.
Yeah, I love that about the real estate community is willing to just extend a hand and help bring other people up to where they were at some point in time. Because no matter what in real estate, somebody's always ahead of you. No matter how many units you have or how much you've done, there's always somebody that's been there and done it, and they're willing to help you get there. You just have to reach out and partake. So very cool. Contact information if somebody wants to reach out and get a hold of you.
That website's good. NoStressDTS.com is a good one to schedule. If you're interested in kind of the direct to seller side, schedule a consultation there. If not, just reach out on social media. Cashflow Cowboy, it's easy to find on social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. And like kind of mentioned it in the beginning, like even if you want to just reach out to myself and just say, hey, great episode. Like that's the momentum and encouragement that, you know, we need on our end to know that we're out here adding value and people are you know, being encouraged by our stories and stuff. And, you know, if you guys have been listening to Josh and he keeps providing great stuff for you, reach out to him and let him know that, hey, this has been super impactful. This last episode got me, you know, a new deal and stuff. Josh wants to hear that. I know he might not say 100%. It, but like we want to hear that. We need that kind of encouragement because that's also just kind of validating what we're doing is helping. And right. And so reach out on social media, connect, even if it's just saying hi and, you know, you found some value in today's episode or, you know, you want to work together or something like that. Connect with me, connect with Josh and kind of build that relationship.
Yep. Just take away one nugget taken away from a conversation. If that changes the trajectory on anything, then it's 30 minutes well spent or an hour, however long the conversation is. So very cool. I definitely look forward to following you. Definitely look forward to talking here again. And we'll talk soon. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Justin. Bye.